You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. We demand a lot of our databases, and our databases demand a lot of us. With Cloud Spanner on Google Cloud Platform, database architects get a fully managed relational database that's globally consistent, scales horizontally across data centers, and speaks SQL. Instead of endless provisioning and worrying about maintenance, you can focus on growing your business. Click to learn more about Cloud Spanner. Visit g.co/getspanner. Again, that's g.co/getspanner. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. From Russia to South Africa, from Turkey to the Philippines, from Venezuela to Hungary, authoritarian dictators have smashed restraints on their power. Media freedom and judicial independence have eroded. The right to vote remains, but the right to have one's vote counted fairly may not. Until the U.S. presidential election of 2016, the global decline of democracy seemed a concern for other peoples in other lands. That complacent optimism has been upended by the political rise of Donald Trump. The crisis is upon Americans here and now. Those are the words of David Frum, who served as speechwriter and special assistant to President George W. Bush. While much of the country has been focused on Russia, David Frum has been collecting the lies, obfuscations, and flagrant disregards for the traditional limits placed on the office of the presidency. In his new book, Trumpocracy: The Corruption of the American Republic, he documents how Trump and his administration are steadily damaging the tenets and accepted practices of American democracy. And on today's podcast, David Frum lays out his case, including why comparisons between Donald Trump and tin-pot authoritarian dictators may not be so far-fetched, how Trump's much-ballyhooed generals could be a liability to the president and the presidency, and why the buffoonery of the Trump administration may really be incompetence by design, with an end game of subverting the rule of law and sabotaging our democratic institutions. He throws cold water on the idea that Trump might be a useful idiot for congressional Republicans, reveals why a Democrat win in the 2018 midterms could drive Republicans even closer to Trump, and discusses Trump's bizarre habit of picking fights with his allies in his own party. Coming up with David Frum in just a moment. David Frum served as speechwriter and special assistant to President George W. Bush from 2001 to 2002. Today, he's a senior editor at The Atlantic and the author of 9 books, including his latest, Trumpocracy: The Corruption of the American Republic. David, thanks for coming on the podcast.
I thank you.
Well, David, I want to start by reading a quote from this book. You say, "If conservatives become convinced that they cannot win democratically, they will not abandon conservatism, they will reject democracy." I've always thought the Republicans are the defenders of democratic values, so explain how something like that would play out.
One of the things that has defined Republican politics over the past decade has been intensifying pessimism about the future of America. Think of Paul Ryan's tipping point speech at AEI in 2010. If the Republicans don't get their way in 2010, if they don't snuff out Obamacare, that's it. The country is pitching over the cliff toward authoritarianism and totalitarianism, and there's no way back. Because of that mood of fear, Republican politics have become very much more radical than they were before the Great Recession. And Republicans have been willing to contemplate tactics that they would never contemplate before. Since 2010, and especially since 2014, Republicans at the state level have gone out of their way to make it difficult for people they think will vote against them to take part in politics. That's a new thing and a very dangerous thing.
Now, if I'm reading Trumpocracy right, it's not so much Trump's policy that scares you. It's the means by which he got into office and subsequently wields that power that you consider dangerous. Have I summed that up correctly?
Very well. I think we all need to understand this is not just about the personality of one unfortunate human being. One of the backgrounds to this whole story is that across the developed world, we are seeing a global crisis of democracy. Let me cite a piece of research that has had a big impact on my thinking. If you ask the following question, is it essential to you personally to live in a democracy? Among people who were born in the 1930s, something like 90% will say yes across the developed world, not only the United States, Britain, Germany, Sweden, Canada, overwhelming, vast, almost everybody says it is essential to me personally to live in a democracy. You ask that question to people born after 1980, and about 25% say yes, it's essential to me personally. And you think, well, is that a trick question? But if you phrase the question in other ways, well, what about a strong man who can cut through politics? You see rising interest in that among younger people. They are disillusioned with democratic politics. And so we're seeing across the developed world the rise of these extremist and strongman parties. We're seeing it in places like South Africa and India, the Philippines and Turkey, but also in Hungary, Poland, France, even Germany.
I know that it's popular for people to compare Trump to, you know, Hitler or Mugabe, Kim Jong-un, but it's not like he's going to follow the typical dictator's playbook and suspend elections or ban opposition, right? Or is that more of a possibility than we realize?
There are a lot of stops on the train line of bad before you get to Hitler station. Modern authoritarianism is not like the authoritarianism of 100 years ago. It's much more economical. It's got much more limited goals. I mean, the dictators of the 1930s and later, they were kind of demented idealists. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Castro, these people had visions of how the world should be. Modern authoritarians, people like, you know, Viktor Orban in Hungary and the law and justice people in Poland, they just want to steal. And they want to shut down government just enough to allow them to get away with the stealing. And Trump is in that tradition of these modern authoritarians. It's just counterproductive to cancel an election. You can do just as well with a lot less fuss if you identify the 6% of the population least likely to vote for you and just cancel their election.
David, do you think there's anyone in Trump's orbit who comes even close to being sort of a Jiminy Cricket on Trump's shoulder who keeps his worst instincts in check?
I think there are people who try to do that. Not exactly in Trump's orbit is the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis. And there are people in Trump world who make various compromises. But here's the problem. You come into Trump's orbit and he changes you. I tell the story in the book of H.R. McMaster, who's the national security advisor, a distinguished soldier in Iraq and Afghanistan, the author of an excellent book on civilian-military relations during the Vietnam War, truly an honorable soldier and a very intelligent and forceful man.
Right.
And yet, by virtue of working for Donald Trump, he's been pushed, and I detail them, into a series of moments when he has to lie to the press simply to cover up terrible things that Donald Trump has done that would upset the Western alliance. I mean, good people do bad things often for very good reasons, but you get compromised. I discuss in the book the advice I give to friends of mine who've had to consider, should I work for Donald Trump? And the advice I give them is, if you're in the national security realm, yes, I mean, the country has to be protected. The military has to be there. We need ambassadors. If you can work for Trump without working with him, that's a public service. But understand that this is a president who will ask you to do wrong things. And if you are not confident that you can say no, don't say yes. And one more thing, if the president were as confident as you that you would say no to a wrong thing, would he ask you in the first place?
As a former White House staffer yourself, do you empathize with those on Trump's team who constantly seem to be put in the position of having to either lie for him or explain away his behavior or walk back Trump's crazy Twitter statements?
Well, I have different feelings about different people. I have one set of feelings about an H.R. McMaster, and I have another set of feelings about a Sarah Huckabee Sanders or a Kellyanne Conway. About those latter group, I just think, isn't there some nice tobacco company somewhere you could work for? You do not have to do this.
Well, the way you describe the officials in the administration, they sound like the gang who couldn't shoot straight. You talk about how incompetent they are, how they make the most basic mistakes, they constantly put their foot in their mouths, they lie on their disclosure forms and constantly seem to make spelling errors. In that sense, is there at least some hope in the lethargy and incompetence of the Trump White House and their complete lack of ability to get things done?
Well, it is certainly true. This is a bumbling White House. I think you saw the invitation to the State of the Union address, and they make, you know, I remember in the Bush years, if any kind of error crept into any kind of, I mean, you'd be up till midnight reversing. How did this happen? Who did it? And I mean, people would be in tears. I mean, it just was so, you know, the president might misspeak, but his cards had better be letter perfect. If he cited a statistic, the statistic had better be exactly correct. And oh, by the way, if you don't have time to call the Bureau of Labor Statistics yourself and authenticate the internet report, we'll find somebody who does have time to call the Bureau of Labor Statistics personally to authenticate, because the president is going to say it. It has to be correct. That they don't have that spirit. Although I have a lot of time for the Michael Wolff book, I learned things from it. I think the portrait there of a bumbling bunch of harmless doofuses is really wrong. For the things they care about, this group is very wily and very effective. They're doing a fine job waging their war against the FBI. They are scoring a lot of successes in that campaign. They don't care much about the things the president should do, but they care a lot about the things the president shouldn't do. And then they're less lethargic.
Yeah, to a certain extent, it seems to be incompetence by design, because as you point out in Trumpocracy, while Republicans have always sought to reduce the federal government through deregulation, you point out that the Trump White House is reducing government through non-regulation. What do you mean by that?
I mean that just a lot of things that need to happen aren't happening at all. That whole areas of government aren't being staffed. The Office of National Drug Control Policy, I mean, one of the things that elected Donald Trump he was the candidate who in 2015 and 2016 was talking about opioids at a time that other people were not. I have an indicator of how disconnected the elite of the country are from this issue. I did a little study of the entries in the New York Times in the year 2016 from January to the end of the year. I searched the number of entries for the word opioid, and then I counted the number of entries for the word transgender, and the relationship was 6-1 in favor of transgender against opioids. I don't want to denigrate the importance of any issue or anything that any group of people are struggling with, but that the drug crisis that has killed in 3 years more Americans than the Vietnam War is 1/6 as interesting to the upmarket people read the New York Times as the transgender issue is I think telling. Yet there's no one at the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Trump can't be bothered to staff it, and the people he sends up, each is more unsuitable than the last.
Yeah, and how does this apply to law enforcement and keeping corruption in check, whether it's corrupt companies, citizens, foreign governments, even Trump's own corruption?
Yeah, well, when it comes to corruption, I think the Trump people prefer wire transfers to checks, but checks and lost in the mail. We are running the least ethical White House, well, since modern White Houses began, and the least ethical presidency ever. I mean, right now, Donald Trump is receiving millions of dollars of payments to his company, not to himself personally, but of course he controls the company, gets all the income from the company, from business partners in other countries, the Philippines, Turkey, India, the United Arab Emirates. None of this is disclosed. We don't know how much. We don't know whether he's getting a flat fee or whether he's getting some kind of percentage incentive system. And those business partners, in turn, are subject to pressure from their own governments, especially his Turkish partners, one of whom was arrested by the Turkish leader Erdogan in the last round of crackdowns in Turkey. Erdogan has power over Trump's business partners. Trump's business partners in Turkey have power over Trump's income. Is that why our policy on Turkey is the way it is? Why the leader of Turkey can get away with sicking goons on protesters on DuPont Circle, beat them up, and have nothing happen? I don't know. But the lack of disclosure makes you worried.
But when he got elected, you know, he quieted critics for a time by promising he was going to have this firewall between the company and himself, and he was going to donate any foreign funds that his properties received to charity. Is there any evidence that he's been able to keep those promises?
There's emphatic evidence that he has not, and that he has no interest in doing so. He has not given any of the proceeds of the ample foreign business that he gets to charity. And the firewall consists of his two terrorized and terrified sons checking in with him, as they say, on a regular basis, and telling him about the receipts and answering every question he has of the business. The trust instrument by which he separated himself, supposedly, from his companies allows him to resume control of the companies at any time and gives him first claim on any and all income from those countries. That's not a divestiture. That's just hiring the weakest possible management team.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with David Frum when we come back in just a minute. Hey folks, SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for the last-minute deal or need the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I have the SeatGeek app near the top of the homepage on my phone because it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I instantly find tickets. I love going to concerts, comedy, and Broadway shows, so just in the past month, I've used SeatGeek to buy tickets for John Mulaney's concert and Hamilton the Musical. Now, folks, you probably know how impossible it is to get seats to Hamilton, but SeatGeek hooked me right up with no hassle. I could have literally wasted hours going on different sites and comparing prices from ticket brokers, meeting some guy on a street corner wondering if the tickets are legit, but instead, SeatGeek made it simple for me to get the best deal on the best seats for the hottest show in town in less than 5 minutes. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek even grades every ticket price based on value to help you get the most bang for your buck. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code KICK today. That's promo code KICK for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Folks, did you know that the average family visits 5 websites before booking a vacation rental? I know how that is. I'm a huge travel junkie. I've been to dozens of countries over the years, and I always spend countless hours online just researching destinations. But now you can spend less time planning your next trip and more time relaxing with Tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals. Whether you're looking for a cabin to get away for the winter, planning your next beach vacation in Hawaii, or the vacation in Europe where you'll live like a local, Tripping.com can help you find the perfect place to stay. Vacation rentals offer flexibility, perks and amenities that hotels don't, like multiple bedrooms, backyards, hot tubs, free Wi-Fi, and even fully stocked kitchens, so you can have a quick bite on the go or plan and cook your own meals. It's great for families and large groups. With Tripping.com, one search lets you filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like VRBO, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more. Don't wonder if you're getting the best deal. You'll save an average of 18% per night by booking your vacation on Tripping.com. So don't forget, if you want to save time and money while booking the perfect vacation rental for your next trip, head to Tripping.com/kickass today. That's TRIPPING.com/kickass. Tripping.com/kickass. Support for today's show comes from an innovative shampoo, introducing Control GX, the first gray-reducing shampoo from Just for Men. Just for Men helps men look their best so they can celebrate who they are, what they achieve, and how they feel. They relentlessly innovate and deliver smart hair care technology that does the work for you, making it radically easy to get that natural look you want. And now, reducing your gray is as easy as washing your hair with Control GX. Just use it as you would your regular shampoo until you like what you see. Subtle, natural-looking results. Shampoo in, rinse out, and move on. It's that easy. Most guys get the results they want in about 2 weeks. Look forward to a smart look. Because when you look as good as you feel, every date night, every meeting, every guy's night out will be something to look forward to. Get 25% off Control GX using code KICK at ControlGX.com. That's code KICK to get 25% off Control GX at ControlGX.com. And now, back to the podcast. you know, Trump loves to brag about his generals. He's in love with his generals, and he's packed the whole administration with military men. Is it possible that so many generals in an administration could become a problem for him?
They're a huge problem. Look, we all admire military leadership, and the people who rise to the highest level of the military are some of the most impressive people in the country, some of the most impressive leaders in the country. So this is all said with total respect for them. But military people tend to have a particular set of outlooks and experiences that are most valuable when balanced by other sets of experiences, by people with scientific backgrounds, by people with legal backgrounds, the military, of course, will always be disproportionately male, by more women in places of high leadership, by people who come from areas where more unconventional thinking is valued. Not that there aren't unconventional thinking in the military, but military people, you tend to rise by doing things by the book. So that's a danger. But the biggest danger is that the military is acquiring under Donald Trump habits of independent behavior. I mean, a lot of people reassure themselves by saying, well, you know, if Donald Trump were to do something too crazy, like order up a missile strike on North Korea, that Jim Mattis will somehow stop him. And let's hope that's true. And of course, we'd all prefer to have Jim Mattis as president than Donald Trump. But it's not the American way that when the president gives the order, the Secretary of Defense considers whether he will or won't carry it out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that sounds like similar things that people in places like Thailand and Egypt have said for decades. You know, if we don't have faith in the person at the top of the political structure, we have enormous faith in the competence of the military, which then leads to military takeovers and whatnot. Could this possibly lead to a soft coup, at least, where these military men think they know better, which they probably do, so they don't share intelligence with the commander-in-chief or manipulate him and refuse to follow orders?
It leads to balkiness. I mean, a soft coup would be an overdramatic way of saying it. One of my master ideas in the book is democracy is not like an on-off switch. You have it or you don't. It's a dial. You have more and you have less.
Yeah.
Right now, we're moving in the wrong direction. Look, if you are, just think of this. If you are the military person of the CIA and you're a conscientious patriot, every day the president gets something called the president's daily brief, which is filled with the most precious secrets of the United States. That brief is typically read by the president, usually the vice president, almost always the chief of staff, certainly the national security advisor, maybe one or two others in the administration. Bill Clinton let First Lady Hillary Clinton read it. A slightly redacted form of the brief is made available to former presidents. Donald Trump has made that brief available to 14 people, including his son-in-law, who is so compromised by Chinese money.
Wow.
You know, as a CIA person, that Donald Trump boastfully blurts precious secrets in order to impress the Russian foreign minister. And you know, he's watching Fox and Friends anyway. He's not reading the brief. Wants it short, he wants it simple, he wants lots of pictures. Get into the habit of leaving stuff out. I mean, if the president asks you point blank, you would tell him. But if he doesn't know what to ask for, he can't ask for it, can he? So I do think there's probably a deterioration in the quality of information that is flowing to the White House. And I do think that there is some tendency among the military to get into the habit of independence. And the danger is all bureaucracies want to slip the leash of their political masters. And militaries are no exception. This can become a habit, and that is dangerous.
Yeah, and perhaps in a similar way to the way that the military views Trump, I think many Republicans in Congress initially approached Trump's victory with a similar logic in that, you know, maybe this is a man who has no real ideology of his own, so he might be a useful idiot who'll sign whatever we put in front of him. Do you think it's worked out the way they planned?
Well, he has certainly been willing to submit to the Republican agenda. Remember how Donald Trump came to the fore in 2015 and 16 by promising to be a different kind of Republican. He wasn't going to cut entitlements. He was going to put middle class economic concerns at the top of the agenda. He was going to be tough on immigration. He was going to have a new approach on trade. So he's jettisoned almost all of that. On trade, he still makes disruptive noises, although aside from canceling the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a terrible blow to American leadership in the Pacific, he hasn't actually done much on that. On the other things, though, he has become a total Paul Ryan Republican with just, you know, nastier noises. So the deal has been consummated. He signs the bills and the Republicans in Congress give him protection from his legal danger.
You've been involved in Republican politics for many years, and during the Bush administration, I don't recall George W. Bush going and fighting with Republicans in Congress all the time, but with Trump, whether it's Corker or Jeff Flake, McCain, he seems to always spend more energy attacking his own party than Democrats like Pelosi or Schumer.
Yeah.
He picks these fights with the same people he's counting on to enact his agenda, who sometimes vote 90% of the time with him. To what end? What does he accomplish making enemies of them?
That's a great question. The to what end question is very important. Look, all presidents tussle with their own parties in Congress. You know, they're inevitably, Congressman who represents Arizona doesn't see the world the same way as a congressman who represents Minnesota. And the president has to balance between those two. And presidents have large agendas and members of Congress have, more parochial agendas. So there are tussles. But the president, one, tussles for a reason. Two, remembers that he will need these people tomorrow. And three, tries to keep the team functioning as a team. Doesn't make it personal. Donald Trump is all about ego. And he has no policy ideas in the usual sense of that term. So when somebody doesn't submit to him, he attacks them in the most personal possible way because he just wants to cause pain and reassert his own power over them, but without much of a sense of actually trying to achieve anything.
Well, whether it's Congress or the media or even various conservative institutions, I want to get your opinion on something. Who are the worst offenders in terms of enabling, elevating, and legitimizing Trump, both during the election and now that he's president?
Now that he's president, probably the most important offenders are the Republican donor elite. The people who, during the campaign, tried to stop him, then after the election, have made their peace with him. But they've done things like they write checks to his inaugural campaign committee, which, completely secret money. And they have decided that they can use Donald Trump to get things done. And not only are they doing that, but they are preventing the Congress from acting in a way to enforce ethical standards on the president.
Well, there was also certainly a good deal of culpability on the part of Fox News, and they seem to have gone out of their way now to avoid alienating fickle Trump voter to the point of largely ignoring the Russia investigation. But if the Trump demographic is, as you point out in the book, poorly educated and low income, at what point might this start to actually affect ad revenue? And perhaps could that financial hit be the thing that finally brings Fox back to a place of responsible journalism and maybe holding the president a little more accountable?
Look, Fox has always had a struggle with responsible journalism. There are people there who want to do it. The audience doesn't care about it. And the dollars flow fastest to the most irresponsible voices. Fox has also become terrified of the risk of losing its audience to Alex Jones, Breitbart, even more extreme kinds of messages. At the beginning of the 2015 cycle, Fox was divided. There were people at Fox who wanted to play a role in choosing the next president, and they thought of Donald Trump as a joker. Donald Trump broke Fox to his will. That was one of the earliest of his important victories over the Republican world. And having been an obstacle to him in 2015, Fox has become his most important resource in the Republican world in 2017.
But if the Trump voters are so poorly educated and low income, mourning the loss of their manufacturing jobs, probably don't have a lot of disposable income, askew technology and innovation, certainly don't buy luxury goods, at what point does pandering to conspiracy theorists and red trucker hats start to become too costly for Fox? When does a business like Fox News finally start thinking about the bottom line again?
Well, there's money enough. It's a big audience. Remember, one shouldn't exaggerate how down market the Trump voter is. There's this apt description of a Trump voter as a successful person in an unsuccessful place. Think of the vice principal of a high school in former coal country and a part-time football coach who's worried by what he sees happening all around him. That's a Trump voter, and it's worth an advertiser's time to talk to him.
But here's the thing I have trouble with, David. I mentioned the poll that you cited that said that only 19% of Trump voters actually went to college. And I'll be honest, every encounter I've had with a Trump supporter bears that out. They seem wildly prone to conspiracy thinking and confirmation bias. They lack critical thinking skills. They question nothing. That's just ignorance by any objective measure. Over and over again, I watch Donald Trump treat his supporters like gullible rubes, even saying that if he told them to go out and shoot someone in the streets, they'd do it. and still they blindly follow him without hesitation. I always hear pundits romanticizing the Trump voter as some type of noble, forgotten man, or suggesting that maybe there's something that the rest of us are missing. Now, I realize that what I'm about to say is probably controversial to suggest, but is the ugly truth that no one wants to admit, perhaps that there exists a huge part of this country that just frankly isn't very bright?
I won't accept that. And because people,
okay,
every person, look, obviously we all vary in intelligence and other attributes. There are many things that go into making a good human being beside brains. We all know terrible people who are very clever, and we all know good people who don't have a lot of academic skills. But that figure came of how uneducated the Trump voter was what referenced the Trump primary voter in the very early part of the Republican primaries.
Oh, okay.
As Trump won, that his voting base came to overlap more and more with the rest of the regular Republican Party. And now, I mean, a lot of people have exited the Republican Party in response to Trump, but now it is Donald Trump's party. I don't think anybody should look at any other group of people as somehow too foolish to govern themselves, but all Americans are subject to different kinds of pressures. And the Trump voters are in places where there's a health crisis unlike anything ever seen in the United States, where there are economic pressures, where they feel that they are being culturally disrespected. That's very important to a lot of people, to feel that you know, just like, so there you are, a Trump, you know, the Trump successful man in an unsuccessful place, coping with addiction and early death and all of the problems you see around you. And then you're told that, oh, on top of everything else, you need to apologize for your white privilege. Well, you think, I don't feel very privileged and I don't appreciate being lectured, thank you very much, by, you know, people who are in so many ways more advantaged than me.
When you look at Trump's Twitter feed or the stream of consciousness press conferences, stunts like the fake news media awards, it's so hard not to laugh at just the sheer buffoonery of Donald Trump. But what do you think of the people who say, and I hear this all the time, some version of, well, he's embarrassing, but it's going to be interesting, or at least he's entertaining? How do you react to that attitude?
The United States is a country in which things have basically gone so right so long that it's hard for Americans to imagine that things can go seriously wrong. But people need to think about that. Nothing lasts forever. No political system is guaranteed permanence. You take frivolous risks with something like the United States government, it can go very bad in ways that you can hardly begin to imagine.
David, I know that immigration has been one of your passion issues for a very long time. I'd say that you're probably more to the right than the left on that issue. Do you find any common cause with some, if not all, of Trump's immigration plan?
I think there are a lot of elements of the Trump immigration plan that I would certainly endorse, for sure. But understand this. During the campaign, I would hear from acquaintances who are involved with Trump world who would say things to me like, you've been talking for a decade about the need for a more restrictive immigration policy. Now at last comes a candidate who's talking about the same things that you're talking about. Why are you hostile to him? You should like him because he's doing what you say. And I would tell them, the reason I was so concerned about immigration was precisely because I feared a country that was taking too many immigrants too fast at a time of slow economic growth would produce a demagogue like Donald Trump. I was hard on the immigration issue to save the country from Donald Trump, not to enable a Donald Trump.
You were trying to keep the pendulum from swinging too far the other way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what responsible political leadership tries to do is it sees when there's a real problem in the country. It understands that problem can be seized upon by radical elements for their own ends.
Mm-hmm.
If you're living in 1970 and you see that despite the passage of civil rights laws, that black Americans are not leading equal lives to whites, and you see that people like the Black Panthers and others are making an issue out of that, that you don't say, therefore, I support the Black Panthers. You say, I need to understand why the Black Panthers are finding followers, and I need to address those concerns so I can marginalize and exclude the Black Panthers from public life. And in the same way, with these sort of, whatever you call them, white supremacists, alt-right people, they are often talking about real things. It's important to marginalize them and banish them from public life. And that means to the extent they're talking about something real, we need to listen to what it is and find a responsible way to meet those concerns.
I want to ask you about the midterm election. If Democrats make gains in Congress, maybe even take control of one or both of the houses, does that become a wake-up call for Republicans to distance themselves from Trump, or do they rally around him even more?
If I had to guess, I would predict they rally around him more because he becomes more important to the party. To pass a tax cut takes House, Senate, and President. To defend the tax cut only takes one of those three. And if you lose the House, for example, or lose the House and Senate, then the president becomes crucial. I also am not so sure the Democrats are going to have the 2018 year that they think they're going to have. The economy is strong. Wages are rising. The tax cut, although filled with favors and favoritism, will put more money into people's pockets. Trump may find his poll numbers rising in 2018. And meanwhile, the Democratic Party, as we saw in their response to the State of the Union address, cannot deliver a coherent message, splinters into many factions, and is constantly being pulled to the left by the people who want to run for president in 2020 and know that going left is the way to win a Democratic primary battle.
Before we go, I mean, it's obvious that what's going on in your own party is very disheartening to you personally. Once the fallout of the Trump presidency settles, is there a Republican Party left? How much damage can the conservative brand withstand?
You know, I don't make predictions, not only because of the terrible risk of being wrong, but also because to make a prediction, you have to think more like a spectator than like a participant. So my view is I'm staying involved in Republican politics because, first, I'm more conservative than a liberal person. And second, because I think you need to have two parties, each of them committed to the democratic system. And when one of the parties seems to be drifting away from democracy, it's especially important to work within that party to ensure that it remains grounded in the political basis. What the medium and long-term future for the Republican Party are, I see some great possibilities and I see some bad possibilities. It can be a multi-ethnic party of enterprise, of limited government, low taxes, a party that says, you know, if you're starting a business, we don't care who your grandfather was. We don't care what color you are. We want to make it possible for we do all we can so that your business has a fair shot at succeeding. But there are other futures, and Donald Trump is pointing to them. And right now, we are on that wrong path.
Well, there's a lot to think about in this book. David Frum's book is called Trumpocracy, The Corruption of the American Republic. David, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to David Frum for coming on the podcast. Order his book, Trumpocracy, The Corrupting of the American Republic, on Amazon. Read David's regular op-eds in The Atlantic, visit his website at davidfrum.com, and follow him on Twitter at @davidfrum. Support for today's show comes from Control GX, the first shampoo that gradually reduces gray from Just for Men. Just use Control GX as you would your regular shampoo until you like what you see. Subtle, natural-looking results. Shampoo in, rinse out, and move on. Most guys get the results they want in about 2 weeks. Look forward to a smart look with Control GX. Get 25% off Control GX using code KICK at ControlGX.com. That's code KICK to get 25% off Control GX at ControlGX.com. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Kick-Ass News Pod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.